program. This hour's top stories. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the downward spiral of the Israeli regime has started and stressed that Palestine continues to be the most important issue of the Islamic world. People around the world mark International Poets Day in support of the Palestinian cause against the Israeli occupation. An Israeli soldier shoot and kill two Palestinians in the northern occupied West Bank. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the downward spiral of the Israeli regime has started and will not stop. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark on the occasion of the International Quds Day. The leader said Palestine remains the most important and a live issue for the whole Muslim community. He said there are two significant factors which determine the future. First and foremost, Ayatollah Khamenei said, is to continue resistance inside the Palestinian territories as well as reinforce the trend of struggles and martyrdom. Second, he noted, is the support by Muslim governments and nations around the world for those fighting for the cause of Palestine. Ayatollah Khamenei said unity among Muslims on the issue of Quds will lead to a nightmare for Israel as well as its American and European supporters. Iran's leader said, the failed deal of the century scheme and the normalization of ties with Israel by a handful of weak Arab states are a desperate attempt to run away from that nightmare. He said Israel has turned occupied Palestine into a terrorist base. So he added, fighting the despotic regime of Israel amounts to fighting terrorism. Every year, Iranians across the country hold rallies to mark International Quds Day, but for the second consecutive year now, no demonstration is held due to the coronavirus restrictions. Our correspondent, Houman Abedi, who's traveled for us to the holy city of Mashhad, has filed this report.
International Quds Day is an event to express solidarity with Palestinians and oppose the Zionist regime. The day is observed by demonstrations around the world on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan. Muslims and non-Muslim communities hold rallies each year in different cities across the world to mark the occasion. Last year, Quds Day was held in Tehran and major cities like Mashhad by a procession of cars. People could attend Quds Day rallies by riding in their cars, but this year, as the situation is more critical, no rallies in person or in cars will be held. Here is a model of the Quds iconic mosque built in the holy shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Ali ibn Musa Reza in Mashhad. The dome is built to show solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians.
After the last day of month of Ramadan was named Quds International Day, we built this structure here in the holy shrine to show support to the Palestinians. This structure is 8 times smaller than the Dome of the Rock in the occupied territories. Many of our programs to support the Palestinian cause are held over here.
We also talked to some people who are called Khadim or Servant. They give service to pilgrims without getting any salaries. These people have a vow with their imam to serve the pilgrims.
I've been working here for more than 32 years in this court of the shrine. I do remember that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, this structure was built here, and since then, people hold cultural activities to show their anger at Israel.
Before the spread of the coronavirus, cultural events like exhibitions, art shows, seminars, conferences, and roundtables were held in this area, which is called Quds Court, to show solidarity with Palestinians. However, this year, to comply with the health protocols, just some restricted programs will be staged in the Quds Court of the Holy Shrine. Quds International Day is an annual event held on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. It was initiated by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, to express support for the Palestinians and show anger at Zionism and Israel. Uman Abedi, Mashhad.
On that story, and of course, the speech made by leader of the Islamic Revolution, I'm going to bring in Professor Sayyid Muhammad Marandi. He is a professor of world studies with the Tehran University, who comes to you live via Skype out of Tehran. Professor Marandi, as always, it's a pleasure to have you with us on the show with me. Please share with us what you made of the leader's speech today and perhaps its most important points.
One thing that many people, especially in Western countries, don't recognize, ordinary people, is the historic injustice that took place in Palestine and how the whole crisis began. It began with Europeans basically wanting to compensate for their own crimes by effectively punishing a nation, a people that had nothing to do with the Second World War. And since then, they have done their utmost to support apartheid, to support supremacism, to support subjugation, colonization, and ethnic cleansing. And it's extraordinary how these countries, how these governments, how their elites, how in their school books, they are able to convince so many people among their own people, and unfortunately even some people in the global south, that they pursue human rights, whereas their open support for apartheid is as clear as day. And it reminds me of their support for apartheid in South Africa. When the revolution in Iran happened, Iran cut ties with apartheid South Africa and started supporting the resistance. And back then, Nelson Mandela, the ANC, and other political parties that were struggling for freedom in South Africa were considered to be terrorist organizations. In fact, according to American law, Nelson Mandela and the ANC were terrorists, as well as others. And even when Nelson Mandela was free, even when he became president, even when his presidency ended, he was still, according to US law, a terrorist. He was only removed, his name and the ANC's name, from the books of law in the United States in 9 years after he retired from politics in 2008. So when we look at what's happening today, it's the same standards. Europeans are Eurocentric, they're exceptionalists, they consider themselves to be exceptionalists, and for them, supporting apartheid is within the framework of their interests, and therefore there's no contradiction in their minds between human rights and racism and subjugation.
Professor Marandi, of course, leader of the Islamic Revolution, has said that the downward spiral of the Israeli regime has started and it will not stop. Just give us the angle to that and, you know, perhaps what does it mean in plain terms as far as the Intifada is concerned, as far as this philosophy of martyrdom and resistance is concerned in that part of the world?
People today are much more aware about the issue of Palestine. And the world has changed, and resistance to the Israeli regime and to apartheid in our region has grown. We see an awareness in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and Yemen, and a willingness to sacrifice among Palestinians today that was not existent before. On the other hand, meanwhile, the Israeli regime, by continuing to colonize the West Bank, has destroyed the facade of the two-state solution. So European regimes, who always tried to close their eyes to the atrocities of the Israeli regime, by pinning hope on some two-state solution, which they knew was never really on the table, now they can't do that anymore, because the regime has colonized so much of the West Bank, and they have taken so many homes and towns and killed so many people in this area to bring about this colonization, that the two-state solution is dead. So they have no claim, or they show no light at the end of the tunnel. It's non-existent. Therefore, the only thing that's left is a single-state solution. In other words, in the eyes of even European liberals who've been hiding themselves from reality or pretending that they couldn't see reality, the Israeli regime is now the same as apartheid South Africa, and therefore it's just destined to collapse.
Again, I try to review some of the points that I managed to jot down of what the leader said. You know, he said, first and foremost, continuing resistance inside the Palestinian territories, as well as reinforcing the trend of struggle and martyrdom. The question is, I'm pretty sure that the leader sees some success in having that trend so far, having followed it. Perhaps on the back of the success that it has gained so far, he says that this needs to be maintained. Don't you think, Professor? What do you think about what he said?
I think that when we look at the changing dynamics across the world, the fact that the United States and Europe are on the decline, and there's no denying that, the fact that their regional clients and allies are on the decline, and it's based upon their strength that the United States protects, that the Europeans protect Israel, Saudi Arabia, and other regimes that are close to the Israeli regime are on the decline. They're all in trouble. In simultaneously, we see a rise in the resistance to hegemony, to colonization, whether it's in Yemen, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's in Lebanon or Palestine or elsewhere, these forces are on the rise. So the Israeli regime, which is a small regime it's not a power at all. It's 9 million people that are subjugating 9 other million people. Forget those Palestinians. Let's not take into account those Palestinians who have been exiled from the country altogether. Mm-hmm. They have no capability on their own. It's only because the Americans and the Europeans are constantly supporting them, funding them, giving them whatever they need that they're able to sustain themselves. But as the balance of power is shifting, and as the apartheid nature of this racist regime is becoming clearer to everyone, even among Europeans and Americans who don't hear anything in their media about what's really going on in Palestine, change is bound to take place. Israel simply will not be able to continue its existence.
Interesting. Those comments by Sayyid Mohammad Marandi, professor of World Studies, University of Tehran. Thank you for sharing your time with your students today. Many, many thanks. That's Dr. Marandi, a very good teacher of mine. Mona Kandil in occupied Ramallah says Israel has put strict rules to allow Palestinians into Al-Aqsa Mosque for Friday prayers on International Quds Day.
And the Israeli authorities had insisted that anyone who wants to enter to Jerusalem Al-Quds must have special Israeli-issued permits in addition to had stipulated that they have to be gotten the vaccine for COVID-19. And of course, this is not all Palestinians succeeded to have this vaccine. In the last years, the Israeli authorities have insisted that only Palestinians with the Israeli special permits, Palestinians with the age of over 50, children under the age of 12 will be allowed. But the situation this year is completely different. However, many arrived at the Columbia military checkpoint from across the occupied West Bank, and the Israeli soldiers who are standing behind us, as you can watch, have prevented them and ordered them to return back. We asked a lot of them, and they said they don't know why they were ordered to return back.
Political commentator Faraz Najim says Palestinians today have a stronger voice than before because of International Quds Day marked across the globe.
I mean, this is a very powerful and strong event in the world and cause. We know this is the event where over 800 cities go protesting and raise awareness for the longest occupation that we see today alive. 73 years of occupation, 73 years of atrocities, massacres, human rights violations. Imam Khomeini, he knew that a lot of the Muslims one day will forget this cause and might be submissive. And that's why he establish this day, a day where people will never forget the oppressed. And this is a cause not just for Muslims. This is a cause for all of humanity, because injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. And now we have this regime that claims it's a Jewish regime in the name of another religion. And it's very close to dismantlement. And we know this because of the weakness from the normalization that they're trying to get recognition from all these, you know, weak regimes, tribal regimes, and we will have to raise awareness. And the Day of Al-Quds is a day of spreading that awareness and strengthening the activists in the world and the human rights organizations that are truly working for human rights.
Israeli forces have shot and killed two Palestinians in the northern occupied West Bank. Another Palestinian was critically wounded as well. That is according to Israeli media citing a police official. Media reports say the three Palestinians had guns and fired shots at the Salem police base. They say Israeli forces responded with gunfire. No Israeli casualty has been reported. Palestinians have not commented yet. Israeli soldiers frequently target Palestinians in the occupied territories. They cite different excuses and accuse the Palestinians of trying to harm the soldiers. COVID infections in India have hit another grim daily record of more than 414,000 new cases. No figure has pushed India's total cases to nearly 21.5 million, the second largest in the world. The country's COVID deaths have increased by almost 4,000 to over 234,000. The virus surged in big cities in the past few weeks. Now, Indian authorities say it has spread to rural areas. The surge has also caused a health crisis. Hospitals are overwhelmed and struggling with severe shortages of medicines and oxygen supplies. Many states have imposed restrictions, but the government is reluctant to impose a national lockdown due to the economic fallout. And that's it with international news.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Today. Rallies were cancelled for a second year in a row due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but that cannot cancel the day and its significance. That's Quds Day, the annual commemoration of the plight of Palestine. It's held on the last Friday of the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, which falls to May the 7th this year. The commemoration is not a passive ceremony, but to keep Muslims alert to action they may have to take to help their brothers and in self-help. Volumes and volumes written over the decades, all on the plight of Palestine. And yet, things appear to have gotten only worse for the Palestinians. Why is that? Is it because the international community didn't want to do anything about it? Or because it's failed in its efforts to resolve the Palestinian crisis? If so, why will such efforts have failed, given so many Arab states exist on the world scene? Perhaps greatly because of exactly that, there being too many artificially produced Arab countries. The division of Arabia, so to speak. I'm Leila Faramayzi, and you stay with me for answers. The past few years have been an era of provocation, as former US President Trump simply cherry-picked Jerusalem out of the Palestinians' garden as the new capital of Israel. That was in 2017, the year of his election. But apparently it wasn't enough to provoke all regional Muslim states. By 2020, five Arab League countries had established diplomatic relations with Israel instead. We visited the Society for Defending the People of Palestine, downtown Tehran. As the Quds session convened at the center, we got to talk to attendees. Sayyid Mohsen Mahmoudi was one. He is chief of the Islamic Propaganda Coordinating Council for Tehran province. To what extent would you say Arab states have helped the failure of any efforts in favor of the Palestinian people?
Unfortunately, due to the betrayal of the rulers and leaders of Islamic countries, the Islamic world has not been able to take a united stand about Palestine and the issue of Al-Quds and the occupation. Imam Khomeini said in his historical remarks that if all Muslims gather up and each pours a bucket of water, it would flood Israel. This is a fact, but why did it not happen? Because the elements of arrogance and exploitation throughout the history of Palestine have tried to pit nations against each other and turn the Muslim nations' leaders into their own mercenaries. They tried to prevent the fierce resistance put up by the Palestinian people from bearing fruit.
The five Arab states defecting, so to speak, were Egypt, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, and Morocco. Saudi Arabia didn't have to, as its very existence is owed to secret deals consenting to the birth of Israel. Saudi Arabia having been founded as late as 1932, as one of the artificially produced states mentioned. Arab action and inaction must have helped international efforts for Palestine to fail. Or perhaps those efforts have failed for the same reason Arabs felt they had to recognize Israel, U.S. bullying.
Throughout history and since its founding, Saudi Arabia, Al-Saud and Wahhabi thought have shown their dependence on others. Saudi Arabia has never been an independent country. It never had free-thinking rulers who would act in the interests of the Islamic world. The British attempts and later the U.S. presence led to their founding and the formation of the Wahhabi thought as infiltrators amongst the Islamic community.
Mr. Ramezan Khani is the Palestine Committee Secretary and Deputy at the Presidency.
Some of these neighbors, and indeed small countries, have established ties with Israel, like the UAE and Bahrain. They are insignificant compared to the will of their people and the resistance. In any case, given the fragility we see in Israel today, they try to establish ties and get into agreements with several countries, including the UAE, Bahrain, and Sudan. But in our opinion, this is nothing special, and they will not lead anywhere. As long as Haj Qasem Soleimani's soldiers are continuing down his path, we'll pursue resistance stronger than before.
UN General Assembly Resolution 3379 of the year 1975 did determine that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination, but it was strongly opposed by U.S. officials. In 1991, the General Assembly effectively negated Resolution 3379 by adopting Resolution 4686. In 1991, I said, the year since which the United States has been the world's dominant military, economic, social, and political power, not to mention hosting the UN headquarters itself in New York City. Call it a coincidence, but the United Nations has been a factory of failures since. After all, it was not designed for the unipolar world we were left with after the fall of the Soviet Union. That is about to change, as are power dynamics in West Asia. Mr. Akbari is in charge for the Palestine Affairs Coordination Headquarters. Why have efforts by the international community failed in resolving the Palestinian crisis, or have efforts not been too determined?
As you pointed out, more than 100 resolutions have been issued by a majority vote against the Israeli regime, but have been vetoed by the United States, and none of them has been implemented. Sometimes they express regret that they don't pass. But the power of the Israeli lobby in the United States and the United Nations is so great that it does not matter to the Israeli regime what position they take, because they say something but take no action whatsoever. See, for example, the four-article plan submitted by the Islamic Republic of Iran calls for a referendum. It demands that the Palestinian people participate in a general election by regulations that are being observed around the world, and anyone who garnered more support takes up office, based on the West's framework of democracy, so they can live in peace. But due to the dominance of the Israeli lobby, the inability of the United Nations, and an extremist American bias for Israel, everyone remains silent.
The U.S. may have bullied and bribed the cousins into turning their backs on Palestine, but to Iran, an atypically non-Semitic, that is to say non-Arab state in the region, standing up for Palestine is both a matter of pride and national security. Iranians both sympathize and realize the depth of the Israeli dream of beginning with Palestine, only to end up occupying from the Nile to the Euphrates, establishing direct Israeli control over most or all of what it calls Judea and Samaria, that is, the illegally occupied Palestinian West Bank. In 1978, Imam Khomeini, leader of the Islamic Revolution of 1979, proposed the naming of the last Friday of Ramadan as Quds Day. This was welcomed by the Islamic world and all nations who see the loss of Palestinian rights as an undeniable fact. Importantly, in the 1970s, the Iranian resistance movement and Shia factions in southern Lebanon further consolidated with Palestinian resistance organizations. How it all began and what is are facts in hand, but the future also seems to be coming to the fore, with extreme measures speeding up historic change. Will Israel succeed in implementing its dark plans for the Palestinians, or is it overdoing it and moving towards self-destruction, given also the resistance movement is standing strong? What's amounted to Iran's regional influence today and its possible reviving of the JCPOA with America has been cause for serious concern on the part of Israel. It was during the Vienna JCPOA talks that Israel, without a shadow of a doubt, sabotaged Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. That concern must obviously have arisen thanks to Iran's military achievements and now the possibility of it returning to the world scene. Let's not forget, America is a ruling ground for Zionist elements behind the scenes.
Israel is insignificant today. As you saw in the past weeks, a missile hit an area near Israel's Dimona nuclear plant, where the most powerful batch of Iron Dome air defense is positioned. They can't do anything. They are yet to realize where the missile came from. They initially said the missile was fired from Syria at an Israeli jet, but overflew its target and landed in Dimona. In a separate statement, they claimed the missile was Iranian. Missiles fired from Syria would have to bypass Jordan, but that wasn't the case. They still haven't found out where the missile was fired from.
To stop annexation by now right-wing run Israel is going to take a lot more than suggestion. Talking of annexation, here's an instance Netanyahu maneuvered on. Annexation of the Jordan Valley was first proposed in the 1967 Alon Plan. But then, in September 2019, it was announced by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as his plan, subject to the outcome of the September 2019 Israeli legislative election. Looking at the desperate situation of dead ends wherever Palestinians turn, it's no wonder Quds Day is respite. Mr. Qoddoumi is the representative of the Palestinian Hamas movement in Iran, as well as a medical doctor. He spoke with us at the usual pleasant location, displaying souvenirs of Al-Quds, or Jerusalem.
What's the significance of Quds Day 2021, given Israel has taken its action up a notch, including bombing the Natanz site, etc.?
When we talk about the Day of Al-Quds, when we call each other to such a noble issue, to be united against the only enemy of the whole humanity and the only enemy in the region, that is the Israeli regime, then we can realize easily the importance of Al-Quds Day. You mentioned about Dr. Fakhrizadeh, Natanz, and General Soleimani, rahmatullah alayh. It's no more secret or fantasy that Israel is directly accused of those crimes on the soil which is far away from what's so-called the Israeli regime.
I'm not done yet, but I'll be stepping out of my own narrative for a bit to see what other media outlets have to say on the matter. Do stay tuned for a media review. Whatever the result, plenty has been said and done since Israel announced the statehood in 1948, May the 15th. That's the day the Palestinians recognize as their day of Nakba, or catastrophe. Now, Quds Day doesn't have to be commemorated only in Muslim countries. I-24 News moves to Germany. In Germany, organizers scrap anti-Israel Quds Day demonstration because of, we will see now, the event which has been taking place in the city since 1996 was slated for May the 8th, with some 2,000 people registering for it, including several Palestinian groups, according to local reports. Jewish and pro-Israel groups have long sought to have the event scrapped. Scrapped for good due to its anti-Israel and anti-Semitic nature. In Germany, calls for Israel's destruction are banned as a crime. Last year, the Quds Day demonstrations in Berlin were also cancelled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Before that, in 2016, Berlin banned the display of Hezbollah's flags at the event, arguing that the fact that it featured a firearm amounted to a call for genocide. To put in a word by the Palestinians themselves, the Palestine Chronicle reads, "Halt Israel's genocidal policies," is Quds Day message. As global solidarity movements in support of Palestine's freedom struggle begin preparations for the annual Quds Day commemoration, America's new administration under President Joe Biden remains stuck in the mud. Ethnic cleansing, the crime of apartheid, war crimes, and defiance of international conventions are parts of a catalogue of horrors, which for decades have become synonymous with Israel. Israel's notorious security agencies, ranging from Shin Bet to Mossad, have long since eclipsed the terror associated with South Africa's apartheid-era killers. That they commit crimes in the full knowledge of their political masters and with the complicity of the regime's military forces, IDF, in broad daylight, is symbolic of tyranny and despotism. Having enjoyed immunity from prosecution during the Trump era, it believes that this will continue with the Biden administration. So far, all indications are that notwithstanding the stark contrast between the Republicans and Democrats, Israel's status as a holy cow binds them. They may differ on a whole range of issues, except Israel. Again, whatever the results, there have been plenty of international motions against Israel, or its actions at least. Irna says, HRW to forward findings about Israeli apartheid crimes to ICC, International Court of Justice. In a 213-page report released on Tuesday, May the 27th, the New York-based human rights group said the Israeli regime was the single authority with primary control over the area between the Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea, and methodologically privileging Jewish Israelis while repressing Palestinians, most severely in the occupied territory. Kenneth Roth, executive director of the HRW, Human Rights Watch, said, "This detailed study shows that Israeli authorities are committing the crimes against humanity of apartheid and persecution. It is coupled in the occupied territory with systematic oppression and inhumane acts against Palestinians living there," he said. The report is based on robust sourcing, including human rights documentation, official planning documents, and statements by officials. AFP cited Omar Shakir, the Israel and Palestine director at HRW, as saying that there had been warnings for years that apartheid is around the corner. "I think it's quite clear that the threshold has been crossed," Shakir said. And that would be it for this segment. Do stay tuned. Back to Iranian support in present times per se, that's in 2020. Iran came up with a logical proposal that Palestinians be allowed internationally to hold a referendum to decide the fate of the occupied lands.
That would mean a vote by all the original and historical inhabitants of the occupied territories, both those who are still there and those who have been displaced. This would include Muslims, Christians, and Jews and their descendants, all original Palestinians. Iran even presented its initiative entitled National Referendum in Palestine to the United Nations. Today, Jerusalem, as Trump's preferred capital of Israel, is not the only sore spot with the people of the region and Muslim world. The United States recognized the Golan Heights as part of Israel through a presidential proclamation signed by Donald Trump on March the 25th, 2019. This made the United States the first country to recognize Israeli rather than Syrian sovereignty over the Golan Heights region.
Trump took a very hurried approach and tried to do a wide range of things in a short time. Israel has been pursuing the policy of expelling the Palestinians and latching onto power for the past 7 years, but has tried to adapt its approaches to what has been needed over the course of time. This has been ongoing until today, when they have proposed a two-state solution so they can lay the groundwork for achieving their goals. But Trump proposed the issue of the West Bank, the occupied Golan Heights, the deal of the century, and the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Al-Quds simultaneously in a very short span of time.
Soon after, in 2020, came the notorious bound-to-fail deal of the century, what Iran calls treason of the century. This Trump or Kushner plan was officially titled Peace to Prosperity, a vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian and Israeli people. It claimed to be the road to resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, or rather, Israel-imposed conflict with Palestine. Practically, the plan would have bought out the Palestinians for measly comforts, nothing close to even a realistic two-state solution. Comforts for their country. It was on 22nd June 2019 that the Trump administration released the economic portion of the plan titled Peace to Prosperity. The political portion was released in late January 2020.
They did not succeed in the deal this century, and in the case of the occupied Golan Heights and the West Bank, they only incited the anger of Jordan, Egypt, and Syria. More importantly, when Donald Trump adopted the policy, he thought he could have the support of many Arab nations. He believed with a strong Arab support, he could back Israel. They believed that instead of negotiating with 1% of Arabs, who are Palestinians, they had to clinch agreements with the 99% so they support Israel. Although some heads of state did so, opinion polls show the issue has only aroused the disgust and the opposition of Arab nations against the United States.
It's no wonder even whatever Palestinians might have been considering a two-state solution boycotted Trump's peace plan and hence had him scrap U.S. funding for Palestinians to pressure them into allowing Israel's expansionism. Expansionism used in relation to Israel highlights the fact that Israel is a modern-day invading power and has no business taking from or sharing with Palestinians. And any West Asian accepting the notion of Israel or a dual Israel-Palestine state is doing so just to take what he can, or out of sympathy with fourth-generation now Israelis. Eyes are now turned to current U.S. President Biden and his role in the peace process or no process. How much he can do is to be seen. Israeli right-wing parties, which dominate the political arena, reject the two-state solution and call for the annexation of about a third of the West Bank. And the Jerusalem Post newspaper listed a rundown of 11 senior Jewish American officials designated for top roles in the Biden administration. The one low casualty way would be if Joe Biden realized the importance of keeping the UN alive by rising above America's misuse of its vetoing power, largely speaking. The number of UN resolutions condemning Israel are more than the total number of UN resolutions against the rest of the world. By 2020, 43 of 46 anti-Israel UN Security Council resolutions were vetoed by the US. And so, instead of Israel stopping in its tracks, it charges on with its agenda, knowing it has undivided backing from the US.
As history has shown, and as we have seen in the last 7 years, the American politicians have a common policy on the issue of Palestine and support for the Israeli regime. and that there is no difference between Democrats and Republicans except for the methods they adopt. They appear to have tactical differences but have the same goal in practice, which is supporting Israel.
What measures has been taken by the previous American administration head by Donald Trump, which has been surrendered or changed by the existing Biden administration? Nothing. They did not return the embassy to Tel Aviv. They did not surrender to the announcement of Jerusalem as an eternal united capital of Israel. They did not do anything about the settlement expansions and the settlement issues inside West Bank and Jerusalem. They did not lift the embargo and sanction over Gaza. They did not do anything.
Even justifying the occupation of Palestine and bearing it down memory lane by prolonging the process cannot whitewash what's going on under Israeli occupation. Even with corona rampaging, there's no respite for Palestinian kids behind bars with no charge. No less than 4,500 Palestinians are in Israeli jails. Of the thousands behind bars, 430 are administrative detainees held without charge or trial, including 180 children and 41 women and girls. There are 550 prisoners suffering from various illnesses, including 11 with cancer, 7 with kidney failure, and heart disease.
The irony, or maybe the racist issue, I would say, in that Israelis are claiming that they are giving the vaccine to the Palestinian. But on the other hand, they are giving the Palestinian, they are giving the vaccine to those Palestinians who are working in the occupied area where they are having an interaction with Israeli citizens. This is why Israel is giving the propaganda that they are, and the beautiful face that they are giving vaccines to the Palestinian. No, they are not giving the vaccine to every Palestinian. In the same area like in Al-Quds, why they are allowing the vaccine to the Israelis and they are not allowing the vaccines to the Palestinians, where they claim their own custody, they claim their own government over Al-Quds, over Jerusalem, why they are doing this discrimination?
But like I said, Israel could be overdoing it with the expansion and inhumane pain it's inflicting on Palestinians, as well as needling other countries such as Iran. And this may backfire on it, especially as the predominantly Muslim region is more determined than before, with greater military might and know-how.
Today we see that Palestine and the resistance are stronger than ever. And we also see Israel, whose slogan used to be dominance from the Nile to the Euphrates, is now trapped within its own fence, unable to govern itself. We are witnessing the events in occupied Palestine. It has reached a point where Israelis and the Jewish residing in Palestine are getting fed up with the status quo. Despite all the concerns and all the betrayals committed by some Muslim nations, the Palestinian resistance is still strong.
That's it for today, but the Palestinian cause lives on to be voiced and fought for. We will be covering developments as we do all sorts of topics, so do tune in at the same time as next week and each week after. Bye for now.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of Al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam Al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, peace be upon him, made a distinction between backbiting and slander. He, peace be upon him, said, "It is an act of backbiting to say concerning your brother what Allah conceals for him. As for the manifest traits of him, such as fury and hastiness, there is no harm in mentioning them. As for slander, is that you say concerning your brother what he has not."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we find in the historical texts of the Muslims a great many conversations, a great many dialogues that we find occurring between the Holy Prophet and the divinely appointed Imams and the people in general. In one such conversation, we find that the fifth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, peace and blessings upon him, alayhi salam, he urges his companions in this dialogue to treat people according to the rules of Islamic social conduct. And so we find that in specific conversation, Imam al-Baqir is talking to his companions, and in this dialogue he has prevented the Muslims from drinking wine and alcohol. And now drinking wine and drinking alcohol is among the mortal sins, the deadly sins. And so Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, in response to a question, says to the companion, "Indeed, the one who is an alcoholic is like the one who worships the idol. He is an idol worshiper." It is interesting and perhaps unfortunate where we find that we have a great many Muslims who live in Western countries. Now, of course, in these Western countries, alcohol is readily available. Now, yes, they say that you have to have a certain age limit, for example, 21 in some countries, in order to be able to buy alcohol. But if you go and you see the reality on the ground, it is readily available, and underage drinking is a very, very common thing in Western countries. Here, as a Muslim, and we would say even as a human being, we should know that Imam al-Baqir has said, "Indeed, the one who is an alcoholic is like the one who worships the idol. They are idol worshippers. Wine makes a human being shake. It makes them unstable. It destroys a person's courage and honor and nobility and righteousness. Wine and alcohol, it makes a person violate the prohibitions that Allah has put upon humanity, such as the unjust shedding of blood and the committing of fornication. Surely, dear friends, wine is the source of many sins and many offenses, many crimes. It is also among the social catastrophes that dishonor and defame human beings and leads people to commit all sorts of sins and debauchery. And of course, as for the bodily damages of alcoholism, is very clear for one and all, whether it is cirrhosis of the liver or other kinds of bodily damages which it causes, including alcohol poisoning. A very important message for the Muslims of today's age in this dialogue, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Attar, the producer of this program, and at this moment I want you to listen to a shorter speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam.
You have to really ponder and reflect and contemplate, because every action is with the niyat. Every action is with the niyat, and this niyat is reflected in our children. If my niyat was to migrate to make money, that is reflected in my children. So I shouldn't be really upset. Why is he not going to Sunday school? Why is he not attending Dua-e Kumail? Yes, there are outside factors. It's in his own place. But what was my niyat? Al-amalu bin niyat. And this niyat is reflected. And we could see ourselves. Yes, if my migration was just because of improvement of life, well, mashallah, we can have house. Maybe it's paid off or have many properties. You know, it was improvement and we did improve. But have we really improved? What was my niyat? The children reflects that niyat. So therefore, it requires a tawbah of the niyat. Oh Allah, now that we are here, whatever the reason might have been, but I seek forgiveness. Is nothing wrong in improving the lifestyle or education or whatever, that is good. But did I kept Deen and Islam in my mind when I took that step with greater consciousness? How strong was my consciousness in making that intention of that step, leaving my parents and coming here, leaving my community and moving here? How strong was that? So consciously did I make that decision? Did I plan it out? Did I think about it? But I just moved, it's okay. I'm not saying that it's haram or anything like that, but in terms of the consciousness. So now I seek that tawbah. I ask, Wallah, you know, as I am here now, and I will be here now perhaps. Now my intention to be here is to fulfill my responsibility towards my deen. To fulfill the responsibility towards myself on whatever, you know, age or on whatever level I have reached.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Are all engraved in stone. Home, where we can plant an olive tree and call it our own. Home, where we can pray in peace under its golden dome. Where we can fly the flag of our beloved home. Fly the flag if you believe in human rights. Fly the flag if you believe in justice and freedom. Fly the flag if you wanna cut through the darkest nights. Fly the flag. Fly the flag for Palestine. Fly the flag. If you wanna tear down the wall of hate, fly the flag. To see the fall of the Zionist state, fly the flag. If you remember 1948, fly the flag. Fly the flag for Palestine. Men and women around the world, from Rachel Corrie to Soleimani, have sacrificed their lives for this land, to end its occupation and set it free. Until the dawn of victory, we've got to stand and not recline. Hand in hand, we are stronger. Let's fly the flag for Palestine. Home, a place where every generation owns the key. Home, where we resist aggression and reclaim our dignity. And freedom, fly the flag. If you wanna cut through the darkest nights, fly the flag. Fly the flag for Palestine. Fly the flag. If you wanna tear down the wall of hate, fly the flag. To see the fall of the Zionist state, fly the flag. If you remember 1948, fly the flag. Flag for Palestine. Fly the flag. Fly the 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 flag for Palestine. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.